Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable with myself, Her Young. I'm joined by Yushun in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. Coming up, something to chew on. Free pet adoption 2.0 is making waves in China's pet world. But wait, is it truly free adoption or just a sneaky way of buying a cat on installment plans? And explore the story of Chongqing's vegetable basket metro line, where elderly farmers find an important way to sustain their livelihoods within the city's bustling metro system. It's a story that intersects between tradition, compassion, and urban life on the metro. If you have a question that you'd like us to answer on a future show, whether it be something that happened in the news or something you're wondering about, you email us with a voice memo to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. It'd be great to hear your voice, and we really appreciate if you could include your name as well as region of residence in that voice memo or email so that we know a little bit more about you when we're answering your questions. Now on Roundtable, as we move on to the next topic of discussion. When it comes to pet ownership, more animal enthusiasts in China are favoring adoption over purchasing. Businesses in shopping malls and pet shops now offer quote-unquote free adoption for dogs and cats, sometimes even including rare breeds. While appealing to budget-conscious prospective pet owners, concerns arise about hidden expenses and potential traps behind the adoption label, raising questions about the true nature of this seemingly generous offer. I confess, with naivete, I thought pet-free adoption was about you arrive at a rescue sanctuary, pick up a dog or cat for free, and then just go home with your pet. But this is more complicated, a business venture. Therefore, it's called Free Pet Adoption 2.0.
Yeah, so here, the word free actually comes with conditions. Adopters are required to fulfill a certain period of the contract. And after this free adoption, consumers or this pet owners are required to recharge or purchase pet supplies on this platform that is designated by this business every month and continue to consume for a certain period, some for 2 years, some for 5 years. And after signing such agreements with the businesses, adopters may be required to pay a penalty if they discontinue purchase or recharges due to reasons such as the pet becoming ill or dying. And that is why on China Judgments Online, an official website which publishes court documents, there are many cases where individuals were sued after adopting a cat for free but discontinuing the purchase of cat food or cat supplies. So according to these, you know, store clerks, they are saying that this is mainly to prevent you or the adopters from abusing or abandoning these pets after bringing them home. So they are setting up this kind of a contract and letting you and forcing you to buy these pet supplies.
Right. Okay. So when you mention platform, is this another app that I need to download if I want to get on board?
Yes. And they are provided by these businesses and where you get these pets for free.
All right. Do I need to pay anything up front? Once I sign the contract on the digital platform and take this cat or dog home?
No, there are no kind of a deposit payment or something. You can bring this pet home directly, but you need to sign this contract and you need to pay them monthly. And actually there are prices on the kind of a cage of these pets differently according to their different breeds. Because actually they are still pricing these pets, but the price that you're paying for are the supplies that you're going to buy.
All right. Okay, so Josh, do you have any questions about the business model? And what was your knee-jerk reaction when you first hear that there is a little bit of a slightly more complicated business proposition than just free adoption?
Well, I think that I see a few red flags here. I think that it's definitely, there's a risk of exploitation I think that when there's not a simple and clear exchange here of goods and services, I think there really isn't a risk of exploiting both the animal and the owner as well, the individuals involved. Because if the animal adoption, pet adoption, really in its essence, it's supposed to be for, I think, for people who love animals and who want them to go to a good home and who feel as though these animals deserve a good home. As a, for example, a dog lover myself, I think I know that maybe not everybody loves dogs as much as maybe I do, but those who do love dogs will probably agree with me. And, you know, they feel as though these animals shouldn't really be equated to some sort of like economic value, you know? And so actually this is not free at all. If there is some agreement to purchase food, for example, for the next, you guys mentioned like 3 to 5 years, right? Or 2 to 5 years, or there's different ones in place in my own country as well. That's not free at all, you know? That is purchasing the dog. So I think that it is very misleading here. And I know that when it comes to the industry of purchasing pets, right, which does exist and is legal, I think, in all over the world, this business practice is definitely at risk of exploitation in many ways. So yeah, I don't think this is adoption at all.
Actually, not everyone are against these kind of business mode, to be honest. For some consumers, they accept it as a form of installment payment, and pets in these stores are generally specific, more expensive breeds, to be honest, such as, you know, British Shorthair, Russian Blue, or Devon Rex, or Maine Coon, etc. So if this, I think, pet owner or adopter, they want some of these specific breeds of cats or pets, these pets on the market may cost them between like 2,000 to 10,000 yuan. That's about around $300 to $1,400. So they still need to buy pet supplies eventually, and they will buy them on any platform. So why not just buy them on this designated platform? And at the same time, a monthly expense of several hundred yuan is, I think, it's still within an acceptable range for them. But I think the controversy lies in the fact that some pets may already have certain illness when handed over to adopters. So if the adopters are unaware and the pets fall ill or pass away after adoption, the adopters not only need to pay for the medical expenses, but also continue to purchase cat food or other items monthly as stipulated in the contract. And that is, I think, the main conflicts in these cases.
Well, that's just a terrible place to be. When, upon adoption, shouldn't all the animals be vaccinated and receive necessary treatment if that's needed?
Yes. There are some laws on this. The health condition of pets needs to be clarified. According to a lawyer, Luo Aiping, from a Beijing law firm, if businesses conceal the health condition of pets during the sale process and sell sick pets at a high price under the guise of free adoption, it constitutes fraudulent behavior during the contract formation. And according to the civil code, which concerns the effectiveness of civil legal acts conducted by fraudulent means, if consumers find themselves in a free adoption scam, they have the right to revoke the contract.
So all in all, is this business proposition legal?
I think not all these adoptions are scams, of course, because some of these, and they are offering, when you're paying for that pet monthly, they're offering you supplies and cat food or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's important to remain vigilant, said the operator of a chain cat shelter in Chengdu. So some free adoption services may lead to health issues for pets or force adopters to purchase overpriced and low quality cat food and litter after adoption. But in fact, this also affects the reputation of some of these genuine rescue and adoption organizations, because they are the ones that are actually offering free adoption, and they will mostly vaccinate for these, we say, stray animals and stray cats and stray dogs.
Yeah, this is not really adoption, really. If it's a business proposition, then somebody's here to make some money, and then it's following the money is always a good way to get to the bottom of things. So you're saying that despite the prospective pet owner does not need to pay upfront, but you're paying, is it for the cat food and feed and, you know, to the exact amount, or you need to pay a monthly deposit and basically deposit that amount of money in the account of that business, and therefore it has liquidity to do all kinds of stuff? And is that essentially what's happening?
It's actually the money that you spend are the money you can buy only for the pets. Uh-huh. Because you are actually recharging on this, we say, e-commerce platform, and you can only buy the items that is sold on this platform.
Before we talk about animal welfare, how exactly are these businesses making a profit out of this? Because they're not asking you to pay upfront.
Well, there's a lot of market in this industry, and there's a lot of ways to make profit, actually. First of all, I know that a lot of adoption services, they are involved in events and fundraisers. They have like adoption events. This is massively popular in my own country and in the US, such as adoption fairs, educational seminars and things like this. They can use these events to raise funds. But a lot of the time, these funds are sort of raised in a charitable manner, right? And I think that the question you're asking is more about, as a business, how do they make profit, right? So pet adoption services, I think that although, as we've discussed today, they may be labeled as free, there are a lot of other charges involved other than just the acquisition of the animal, right? There are a lot of things like covering the costs of caring for the animals. There are many expenses such as spaying and neutering, vaccinations, even things like microchipping. Again, although some of these costs may be considered like charitable, if the business is big enough, they can make good business with this, right? They can have business with the service that neuters the dog or the service that microchips the dog, for example, or whatever animal it is. I guess it would usually be a dog or a cat, right? But dogs are usually the ones that roam about freely. So that's why you microchip them, so that you can track them, right? Like any business, you know, if you have a massive adoption service and you're microchipping a lot of dogs, that's business in itself. You're probably doing business with the company that's microchipping them. And I think also, again, like pet products, in this specific examples that you guys have been talking about today, we're talking about, for example, pet food, right? Again, if this company's big enough and the purchaser has agreed to pay for pet food for 5 years, this pet food is usually going to be from the same brand, right? These adoption shelters are probably going to operate with retail stores for things like toys, food, and bedding and stuff like this. There's a massive company in my own country called Pets at Home, and they offer some services like this as well. So there's a lot of business to be done here, I think. Not to mention things like sponsorships. As well from bigger companies.
Mm-hmm. So therefore,
sponsorship deals.
Okay, here's a little bit of a linguistic question. So when we talk about adoption, like in the international situation, does that automatically evoke, mm-hmm. Oh, it's free? Or do you kind of expect to pay a certain amount of money, but usually maybe it's a small sum of money because you're not purchasing a new animal, but it's more like rescuing from an existing number of animals?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it, because there is sometimes a little bit of crossover between these two words, which is adoption and rescuing. And rescuing an animal is similar in some ways, but it's also quite different, right? Because to adopt doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting the animal for free all of the time, right? It usually means that it's the animal's second or maybe even third or fourth home, right? It usually means that the animal is not quote unquote new, right? Or something like this. I'm sure that there's probably better words to use than that. Rescuing an animal is slightly different, because you would usually get it from a rescue shelter, but usually you would adopt an animal from this kind of place as well. It's a good question that you ask, because these terms, I think, sometimes are used interchangeably when they can be quite different when it comes to the economic value placed on them both.
Yeah. And also in the case scenario that we headed this discussion off with, there could be this maybe intentional exploitation on people's good intention, because once you see adoption and you immediately think of, oh, this is a good thing to do. And also it says it's at zero cost, therefore free. And to get people sort of interested in the proposition when, in fact, after attempting to explain the whole scheme, it doesn't sound to be all that free at all. So,
yeah, and I think according to some of the cat owners that I know, without including medical expenses, the consumption of daily items such as cat food and cat litter does not reach the amounts that stipulated by these businesses. So this may result in consumers not being able to spend all of their recharged money or being forced to make excessive purchases. And that, I think, is the reason and the way that they can like give these adopters some these pets for free, and they just want their, you know, capital to be in their platform, so that I think this is the thing that they actually want. They would like to have your money in their account, but of course it is flowing, because you can actually spend these money still with a huge amount of consumers. I would say the total sum of expenses exceeds the price of purchasing a cat. And in that case, they are actually selling these pet products. And I think that is the main profit that they are gaining from this business mode.
So for those who are serious about adoption, what are some of the things one needs to go through your mind before actually making that important decision?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing, of course, is your living situation. I think that you need to have a space that's suitable for your pet. Actually, a lot of responsible adoption agencies, I know that they will actually come and interview you and ask you some of these questions. And as a professional, they'll be able to tell you whether your space is suitable for this type of pet and maybe even a certain type of breed. There are different types of breeds that require different amounts of space, different amounts of exercise, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's also why you have to consider your lifestyle compatibility, right? How often are you going to be home? How much time are you going to be able to spend with the animal? Is the animal going to be able to rely on you for long-term commitment, right? Pets can live for many, many years. And I think that a lot of people, when they acquire the animal, they maybe don't consider that. And I think this is often why animals end up getting abandoned and things like this. It's a huge commitment. And I think that we all need to consider this before buying or adopting.
Yes, and also I think we should not focus on the specific breeds of pets, because opt to adopt animals from reputable channels such as National Adoption Days and Animal Protection Centers, which typically do not charge fees. And I think why we are discussing this issue and a lot of this promotional lines of these free adoption, quote unquote free adoption stores, are they can offer special or specific breeds of animals. So I think inquire about costs before adoption, and if there are any doubts, refrain from adopting. And also we shouldn't not, and I think a lot of people are not caring too much about the breeds of the pets they are going to adopt. And a staff member at a stray animal rescue center said, they hope that people adopt more stray animals rather than those attractive purebred pets. And I think the way that we actually showing our love to these stray animals.
With this kind of topic, I often feel the living being, which is the animal or the pet itself, is kind of neglected. I think the most important thing is, okay, in my opinion, is the welfare of the pet and the animal. And therefore, it's one promising change that the preference for pet adoption over purchase is gaining ground in this country. And with these new inventions, I think always having some second thoughts and to really understand what's behind the scheme is kind of important here. Coming up next, join us in uncovering the story of Chongqing's Vegetable Basket Metro Line. Stay tuned.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West and understanding is the goal.
It's the hour of Roundtable with myself, He Yang. I'm joined by Yu Shun and Josh Cotterell. In the vibrant city of Chongqing in western China, where close to 32 million residents call home, a metro line, affectionately known as the Vegetable Basket Line, winds its way through the urban landscape. Each morning, amidst the hustle and bustle, woven baskets brimming with fresh produce accompany the briefcases and backpacks of commuters. These backpacks belong to a group of elderly farmers from nearby towns who rely on the metro to transport their goods into the city, hoping for better prices. So this vegetable basket metro line has caught the attention of so many people in this country. Tell us a little bit more about its history and present day story.
So this is actually a nickname of the Line 4 in Chongqing, southwest of China. And it is the line connecting Sichuan town to the city center. And it has a total length of 32.8 kilometers and 15 stations. It has provided local farmers near the town with a wider channel for selling their produce since its opening in 2022. And before the line opened, farmers would sell their vegetables in their town. And the town was small, so vegetables sold slowly and prices were very low. But after the metro opened, farmers discovered that they could sell their vegetables for a higher price in the city center. So many farmers started taking the metro to the city to sell their vegetables, and they may carry baskets on their backs or in a small cart. And these baskets made of bamboo are usually filled with fresh vegetables and fruits. And so that's why a lot of people are calling this line vegetable basket line.
Mm-hmm. And also to carry these baskets, sometimes a traditional method to use a pole to balance both baskets and carry it on the shoulder. And I checked the subway regulation across the country. A lot of cities don't allow these massive things that could potentially do harm to commuters onto the commute. And I suppose this is also one of the reasons why that this has caught the attention of people, that it's almost like the local public transportation authorities have given special permission to a special group of people who are selling fresh produce and transporting all these goods on the city metro. So, Josh, do you have some comparison scenarios to offer us? And also, what was your initial reaction to the story?
Yeah, well, there are some comparisons. There are some producers that give directly to customers from farms, and some of them do have charitable components. Some of the examples that I found that compare to the ones that you've just given. For example, there is Riverford Organic Farmers in my own country. And this is, it's actually a business. It's providing organic produce to customers, but they also have some initiatives and partnerships aimed at supporting community projects. There's another example that I found called Farm Drop, and this emphasizes supporting local farmers and sustainable agriculture practice. But also they have some partnerships and initiatives that contribute to charitable causes. However, I don't think that we have any examples so similar in the sense that people are actually carrying the produce in the way that you've described. I don't think that that would be possible in my own country, also given how terrible the train services are in the United Kingdom anyway.
Well, the thing is, when you are talking about a mega city, which is home to close to 32 million people, and a lot of them are commuters on the metro station, do you think there, like before this special designated line was allowed, there might have been a pretty tough discussion between the different parties? Because of course you're going to be talking with people who possibly value space on the subway, and we all know how crowded that could be when you've got a huge population, but also you've got the welfare and benefits and basic rights of commute of, you know, possibly some people say vulnerable groups, because these are elderly farmers. I suppose younger farmers might have other ways of transportation, such as driving a small car or whatnot to transport the goods, but these are, you know, very traditional ways and methods to transport the fresh produce from A to B. So what I'm trying to drive home is, what do you think of this discussion, negotiate, and trying to meet the different needs of different people in a city when we're talking about a scarce public good that is public transportation during peak hours?
First of all, I think it is not a special designated line for these elderlies to sell vegetables. It is just a line that happened to connect this town and the city center, and these farmers or elderlies are using actually the convenience of this metro that brought them. And that's why I think some of the netizens are commenting that recently the city should prohibit passengers from carrying these large items, including the baskets or during peak hours, because they can hinder other passengers when space is especially limited. But this Chongqing Rail Transit responded to this a passenger that they can carry items on the subway as long as the sum of the length, width, and height does not exceed 2 meters, and the weight does not exceed 20 kilograms. And that's why this response has not only warmed the hearts of a large number of farmers, but also the general public and the netizens. And they're saying that it is what a modern city should be. The farmers who carry baskets and those 9-to-5ers who carry laptops are essentially no different. And they are just carrying the stuff that they bring with them. So I think the point is also about the staff stated that if passengers notice that the vegetables carried by these elderly vendors on board emit maybe smell or juice, or if they soil the carriage, they can report it by phone, and the subway is equipped with cleaning staff, and the workers will also step forward to handle this situation and their respond to this as soon as possible. So I think at least they are not only responding them, they're also offering some solutions.
Such vegetable baskets or baylo could easily be stigmatized in any city in the fervor to craft an immaculately modernized image substantiated by technology, gentrification, and speed. But considering there has been so much hype about the metro as a state-of-art transportation flattering the image of a major city, but a closer look reveals that its fundamental purpose is to serve as a lifeline for those seeking to make a living. So no wonder so many people find this story to have a positive takeaway, and all honest labors deserve our respect. And that brings us to the end of today's roundtable. Thank you so much, Yu Shun and Josh Cotterell, for joining the discussion. I'm He Young. We'll see you next time.